Now, adjust the volume control so that the sound can be heard in all parts of the room.
This is the Protect Your Assets podcast.
You get the idea? Bring me
a dream. It's on the internet. Make him the cutest
that I've ever seen. Go on. Give him two
lips. Like it's like no cheese I've ever tasted. And tell him
that his love. Here's the Sandman. Over
Sandman. You love it. You know you do. Why else would you spend so much time with it? I'm talking about your favorite car, or if you're fortunate, car collection. But the truth is, when you die, decisions will have to be made about your car that you may or may not agree with. Why leave that to chance? Well, good morning. This is Protect Your Assets, and I am David Hollander, your host. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome. People around here, yeah, they call me the Sandman, and that's because I help you sleep well at night by answering your most troubled legal or financial questions each week. That's because I run a financial services institution and am a practicing attorney for almost 30 years. Well, last week was car week in Monterey. And the auction results were, get this, $469 million. It set a new record. Cars are going for some serious money right now. Even though the market yesterday, we'll talk about that in a minute. But gosh, I don't know many people who have a $7 million Ferrari, but I know a lot of people who have, get this, a 67 Chevy Camaro Z28, $65,000. A 70 Hemi Cuda, $210,000. How about this? 1968 Mustang, $90,000. Or do you have a friend who has a Porsche 918 Spyder? How about $1.5 million? You heard me right. So if you have a car collection, and let's say you have a will, or a trust, realize that may not be enough. Cars present a special set of problems, and if not dealt with effectively, they can consume a fair share of effort, anxiety, expense for all your loved ones you leave behind. So with a little bit of foreplanning, that just doesn't have to be the case, and that's why this morning, that's what we're going to be talking about for all of you who are not prepared about that. So let's get started now. Yeah, it was a tough week for the market. Clearly, the economic news is not controlling the market. The Fed is. So the market for the week finished down on the Dow, down 4.2%. The S&P 500 down 4%. NASDAQ off 4.4%, back in correction territory, over 22.4% down for the year. I know. The 10-year yield at 3.02, flat for the week, and bonds down 9.7% year-to-date. Oil closing at 92.92 a barrel. So what happened? this is the question I keep getting. And this is what's happening. Friday, Chair Powell spoke at Jackson Hole and was talking about inflation and how the Fed's policy isn't exactly what the market thought. And so the market didn't like that. And you saw exactly what happened on Friday, which wasn't very good. And because inflation and growth right now appear to be rolling over, the pace of what the easing of the rising rates isn't as slow as what the market was hoping for. So clearly, you know, Chair Powell, he didn't provide any clues about whether they're going to raise the rate 50 basis points or 75 basis points next month. We're just a few weeks away from that. It's not surprising, since Fed officials have stated they don't intend to let us know what they're going to do. They're going to look at the data and then make decisions. So that's why the upcoming August employment number we'll see next Friday. Any sort of inflation numbers that keep coming out next week, Got to pay attention to these things because that could determine what they end up doing mid-September. So people are asking me, well, what's changed? A key reason why the rebound in stocks has basically stalled is that the market has walked back now expectations for what the rate cuts are going to look like through the end of 23. We're out over a year now. And so the front loading that was going on with the rate hikes is removing pressure from the Fed to act, but we all know rates are going to rise. And Powell said that they're not going to prematurely change their policy. So I think a likely scenario is the Fed fund rates are going to peak around 3.75%, maybe 4. And we'll probably see that in the next 6 months. And that's because as inflation starts to calm and roll over, which we're starting to see that right now. I'll talk about that here in a second. The Fed can start to back off a little bit and then tell us about that. So that's what I expect to happen. More about why is economic data not driving the market right now? That's important because this is sort of the first time that's happened. We get these reports that come out and the market doesn't really do anything. But then when the Fed says something, all of a sudden, wow, we have these big moves. Why is that? Well, let's look at a couple of things that happened last week. You have something called the Producers Manufacturing Index. This basically measures production, producing stuff. And the August one came out last week. It was 45 was the number. The estimate was 49.2. Remember, anything below 50 is a contraction. So 45 is surprising. It was quite a bit lower than 49.2, which was the estimate. And you would think that that's sort of bad news, right, would affect the market. Well, it didn't. It didn't at all. And that's because the market's saying, well, if that's not really a bad number, in other words, there's not inflation there, then the Fed's more likely to ease. And this was the first case in point where it showed that the economic data is not being reflected in the stock market. Next, we had the second data point this week in the economy since the pandemic had to do with the bad is good scenario when it came to just overall weakness in the travel sector. And let me explain that. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've now been traveling around to these weddings, okay? And yeah, I'm just going to say that's that. All right. Anyway, the fact is the airports are packed. The planes are packed. Hotels are oversold. There's no rooms. And you're saying, what do you mean? Well, here's what happened. Part of this number we got this past week had to do with travel and leisure activities. And according to the numbers, it's slowing down hard. And if that's true, we should expect growth to slow in the next coming months as well. And again, you would think the market would drop on that news this past week, but it didn't. So again, this is a second area where we're seeing things happen that just don't make a lot of sense, and you're not alone. So don't feel bad. Now, is the bull market rally over? Good question. And so the recent pullback we just saw in stocks that just started, I think is not actually a bad development from a technical standpoint. Let me talk about that. So I'm talking about technical right now, graphs, charting, that sort of thing. And the simple reason why I'm saying that is the broader stock market does not move in a straight line. Duh, it bounces all over the place. The market flows like a river, ebbs and flows. And so we need to set new highs or new lows to actually build what we'll call a base. So the previous resistant levels that we've been talking about are now developing what's called a support once the market moves beyond them. And this is healthy. So I view this recent pullback in equities as a step in an overall process for the market to attempt to put in a bottom. Now, I'm trying to be clear here. My view is not that the market has bottomed for good or that we're headed for new all-time highs. But I think the S&P 500's ability to snap back in late June, trend sideways for about a month, and then start to rally was the first positive we've seen to forming what I'll call a tradable bottom. So right now, my outlook overall remains neutral because I still need to see the market establish what I'll say is a new bottom and then move to a new high beyond the month-to-date peak, which we just saw, which was 4,300. And right now, the bottom, again, these are predictions based on graphs. I'm seeing that this level of 4,000, 4,050 is what we just saw, or 3,900. That could be the particular bottom that we're trying to form right now. So in order to get there, we have to see peak inflation, peak hawkishness. We have to see China fully reopen. And we have to see more resolution to this Russia-Ukraine war. And it's also important to consider that for the longer term, this new bottom takes to form, the more formidable, the more support, the more faith I'll have in confirming that we've ultimately bottomed. So thank you for the question. I know we're trying to figure out where things are going, but as you know, it's a little bit like reading the tea leaves. Now, coming up next, we're going to be talking about your car or your car collection and what you can do to protect your loved ones and arguably maybe your favorite asset from being negligently given away. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Show with David Hollander. We'll be right back.
Trucking. Got my chips cashed in.
You can ask the Sandman questions and hear this show Protect Your Assets hands-free anytime on your Amazon Echo smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, ask Protect Your Assets to play the latest podcast. Find out more at libertygroupllc.com/voice.
Now back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
Arrows of neon and flashing marquees out on Main Street.
Welcome back. David Hollander, also known as the Sandman. And you're listening to Protect Your Assets this morning. And last week, they had the big car show in Monterey. And some of the prices that were fetched for some pretty average cars got me thinking. For that kind of money, will a will or trust be enough? Are you creating a special problem for your loved ones? Well, if you're tuning in right now, you're listening to the right show because we're talking about that this morning. You may have a spouse, a child, maybe a grandchild or another family member who shares the same passion for your car or collection as you do. But more often than not, none of your heirs feel as strongly about that car as you do. Even those who do might not feel that they have the knowledge or the finances to properly care for it or the space to keep it when you're gone. Cars cost money, sometimes real money. They could be worth two or three times or more what you paid for them. But as you know, you have to constantly put time and energy into them, and you have to have a place for them to live. Then you have to maintain them, repair them, insure them, register them, all that sort of stuff. It takes money just to own your car. So whoever you leave that car or collection to is going to have to bear those costs. And with that in mind, it's important to have a frank conversation with your family or the person that's going to ultimately receive that. So talk to them. Say, you know, would you or could you become a steward for this car, or would you just sell it when the time came? Regardless of how that conversation goes, what's super important is you have to make your intentions known, preferably in writing. So whatever decision you make, it's important if a car is going to go to someone outside your immediate family that you put that down in writing somewhere that's binding. Let me give you an example. Have you promised your car to a friend at a specific price? Well, we came across a case where a distraught widow had a Porsche in the garage, and One of her late husband's friends came around asking what's going to happen to the Porsche. And he told her that he had been promised the car by her late husband at a specific price that was severely discounted to the car's actual value. Now, she was so upset about losing her husband that she was considering taking the deal to just stop the harassment, if you will. Now, that could have been avoided if this individual had a will that said specifically who was going to get it and how much that person would pay, or mention a fair market value. So if you're doing this, and I see this all the time, you know, please make yourself a will. And in the will, name an executor. And the executor is the person who's going to oversee disposing of your assets, including maybe this car. And so find out how knowledgeable they are about your car. And if the answer is not very, then you could add someone else to help sell that specific car. So have an executor deal with your other stuff and have someone who's knowledgeable, like a good friend, be the special executor with the authority to deal only with your car or your car collection. Now, you could also have the executor in your will have to consult with, say, an expert or someone you know in the industry who knows the ins and outs of owning a collection and how to deal with selling that vehicle or multiple vehicles. Having someone knowledgeable handling the sale after you're not around increases the likelihood that your beneficiaries will get the full market value for your cars and that they will be properly taken care of until the time of sale. So have a frank conversation with your executor and make sure they understand what's involved in selling that car and that they want to do it. The role of an executor is time consuming. So don't, you know, just do it because they're your friend. Offer to pay them reasonably. What's reasonable? Well, typically 1%. 1% of that value, and usually fees are a minimum of $3,000 a year just to deal with something like this. Make sure you're organized. Know where all your cars are. Now, you may laugh, but I have many friends who have cars at one shop, at a team, at another garage, kind of spread all around. And their family has no idea where to find them. So just make sure that's all written down somewhere with addresses and contact numbers and things like that. Now, if there's spare parts and records, receipts, restoration work, etc., that all adds to value. So make sure that the executor or person knows where those things are and make sure that that's all part of your plan. Now, where do you keep all this stuff? Well, we have something called a vault, and part of our financial plan, we use something called e-money, which is all in the cloud. It's all encrypted and it's unique. You can create a special folder in your vault. Call it cars, call it, you know, the specific car that you own, and then break it down that way. And in that folder, you save all those records. So they're not only protected from any hack, but also people know where to go get them. They're in a safe place. And so that's a good thing just to make sure you've done all these things, because if you haven't, you could be in a world of hurt when things start to happen. Do you know what the worst bear market has been in U.S. history? Well, that was the bear market from September of 1929 to June of 1932. And that resulted in 86.2% loss for the S&P 500. They say the market always comes back, right? Well, it does, but the question is how long will it take? You would have had to wait until 1954 just to break even from the bear market that began in 1929. That's 25 years to recover. And that's exactly why people nearing or in retirement need to be more preservation-minded so that a bear market doesn't set them back, especially if you need income from your portfolio. It is virtually impossible to predict where the market's going to go next week or the week after that. But there are things you can do and look at right now to help you understand what's going to likely occur in your portfolio. I'm talking about starting with a portfolio MRI. We have a tool here in our office that takes a snapshot of your portfolio and can show you with a 95% probability what can happen on the downside and the upside over the next 6 months. If you haven't taken the Riskalyze test yet, let this be a wake-up call for you. Do it now. I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines right now so you can get your very own portfolio MRI and find out what your downside exposure is over the next 6 months by calling this number, 866-PROTECT. Pick up the phone right now, dial 866-PROTECT, and finally find out what your portfolio is capable of doing in the next 6 months. Now, this won't cost you a nickel, but you got to call us right now, 866-PROTECT. You heard me, no charge. Call us, 866-PROTECT. Coming up next, it's time for our popular They Say segment, where they say you should put your car in your trust. Is that a good idea? Find out. Remember, it always pays you to keep attuned right here. You're listening to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman. That's me. We'll be right back.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare man. I breathe the mountain.
You can ask the Sandman questions and hear this show Protect Your Assets hands-free anytime on your Amazon Echo smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, ask Protect Your Assets to play the latest podcast. Find out more at libertygroupllc.com/voice.
Now, back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
Welcome back. I'm David Hollander, also known as the Sandman. And you're listening to Protect Your Assets this morning. We've been talking about your car. And maybe it's been everywhere, but it could be worth a lot of money. If last week's Monterey car auction taught us anything, that old car could be worth a lot. This morning, we're talking about what you can do about it. Now it's time for one of our fan favorite parts of the show, our They Say segment, where we debunk common myths, half-truths, and sometimes just bad advice that they say.
Who are they? What do they know that I don't? And what are they saying this week? Here's David Hollander, the Sandman's answer.
All I know is that I don't. So here's one they say. They say that you should put your car in a trust. Is that always a good idea? Not necessarily. Well, let's talk about the things you want to avoid. First of all, you want to avoid probate. Now, in California, if your car is worth more than $150,000, and by the way, after the auction last week, that could be quite a few cars, then it's going to go to probate. And this will happen when you die. A car becomes part of your personal estate. So if you have the pink slip, your name sitting on it, it's there in the folder somewhere, stuck in the closet. I'm talking to you. The car is going to have to go through the court process, known as probate, to distribute it to your heir. Now, that's designed by statute. If you don't have a will or some document that's legal that says who gets the car, then the judge is going to decide that. And even if you have a will, the car will still have to go through probate. And in California, that can be expensive and time-consuming and subject to challenge and open to the public. So there's a couple easy ways you can avoid all that mess. First, think about joint title. So on the deed, you would change the title as follows. You could put your spouse's name on there. So a car that is jointly titled will avoid probate because the surviving spouse or joint owner is already named as a co-owner with you on the vehicle. But something that's important that you need to put on that document, it needs to say joint tenants with right of survivorship. Because if you held it in any other form, say like a tenancy in common, that then goes back to probate when one of the parties dies. Now, if it's in joint tenancy with right of survivorship, when one of the parties dies, it automatically by law goes to the joint owner and doesn't have to go through probate. But beware of losing half of the community's step up in basis. Talk about that here in a minute. What about a trust? Well, a simple way to avoid the hassles of probate is to set up a revocable, meaning you could change it later if something happens, you change your mind, living trust. And then you go down to DMV and you put the car into the name of that trust. That way, the vehicle is no longer in your name, and that avoids probate. But what does your trust say specifically about your car? Now, if you missed the first segment of the show, I was talking about issues, hassles, things that come up when it comes to owning a car. So make sure that that information, the pointed parts I pointed out, are in your trust document. Also, something else you should consider if you do this, again, the trust, liability. What other assets are in that trust? And a car in the name of your revocable living trust will be subject to creditors or accidents that that car is involved in, and then open up that whole Pandora's box. So this could open up your other loss, your other assets like your house or your brokerage account to a lawsuit. While you're still alive, owning vehicles in a trust is not much different from owning them outright. Yes, it avoids probate, and you have the same rights and responsibilities if you own it in your name as if you own it in a trust that can be revoked. As the trustee, you still have the power to buy new cars and add them to the trust, borrow against the trust, or sell any cars that are in the trust. When you sell a car, the bill of sale is signed by the trustee, which is usually you, as the vehicle's owner. Putting your cars in a trust doesn't change any income tax that'll be owed on that car if the vehicle sold at a profit. What if you're going to not pass that car into somebody who really wants it? Well, then you may want to sell it now. And so some collectors that I meet, as they get older, they're not able to drive them anymore, enjoy them, take care of them, decide they're going to sell them now. And the advantage of selling a car now in this market, well, it's a pretty hot market, so you may get top dollar. Also, you have a lot of knowledge about that car, history, and so you can transfer that when you make that sale to the person who buys it, because when you're gone, that information is often lost. For cars that have appreciated significantly, there are capital gain taxes that may make it advantageous to pass that car later as part of your estate as opposed to selling it now. What do I mean? Well, if you sell a car that is appreciated, the difference between the selling price and the price you paid, less any restoration costs, is subject to a federal capital gain tax of 10%. And the state of California could add another 10% on top of that. So a collector who wisely bought, say, a Lamborghini Miura 30 years ago for $100,000 and sells it for, $950,000, would owe tax on $850,000 worth of gain. But if that same Lamborghini passed through the estate to a fortunate heir of that collector, the heir's cost basis is not the original price paid, but the appraised value of the car when he or she inherits it. So if the Miura appraises for $950,000 and the heir sells it at an auction, they will owe capital gain taxes only on the car if it fetches more than the $950,000 appraisal value. In other words, that $850,000 capital gain that the original owner would have had to pay tax on will not. This will be stepped up and not taxed to the beneficiary. Now, what's something else you could do? Well, you could arrange now and sell later. I'll call this the middle ground. This is where, after you pass away, the car gets sold. And so you want to make arrangements with an auction house or other venue ahead of time to handle that eventual sale, because the process for pre-selecting that company should be done by you. And it will look something like this. The company will need to familiarize themselves with the car or the collection. They can assist with putting together appraisals for you and walking you through how they're going to do that. The appraisal cost is applied if the collection doesn't come to the company for sale. In other words, that's when you would have to pay them. And you can negotiate the commission, how much of a commission that seller will receive. So all this is something you can set up ahead of time and save your heirs a lot of time and headache. Now, don't forget, the tax man is going to come. So under current estate law, If your estate's valued at $12.06 million or less, then it's not going to be subject to estate tax. Now, if you're married, that figure is doubled, and it indexes for inflation. In 2025, however, that exemption is going to sunset and go back to what it used to be. And currently, some states levy their own estate tax on any estate when you pass away. Even now, like Massachusetts kicks in a estate tax at $1 million or more. And this tax is going to be due 9 months after you die. Yeah, I know. There's so much to stay on top of financially, isn't there? You think everything's safe, everything's in a good place, but is it really? The truth is, it doesn't have to be complex or confusing if you're organized. So you can pick up the phone right now and you can get organized by calling us 1-866-PROTECT right now to find out if you're in good shape. It's just a phone call, and you want to find out if your car, if your things that you love are really arranged the way that you want them to be. Never hurts to get a second opinion. Give us a call, 866-PROTECT, and we're here to help you. It's time for a quick break. When we come back, find out how Henry Ford avoided paying taxes on his car collection. It's all coming up next. Stick around.
You can ask the Sandman questions and hear this show protect your assets hands-free anytime on your Amazon Echo smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, ask Protect Your Assets to play the latest podcast. Find out more at libertygroupllc.com/voice.
Now back to Protect Your Assets with David Hollander, the Sandman.
Welcome back. I'm David Hollander, also known as the Sandman. And you're listening to Protect Your Assets this morning. And we're talking about an asset that a lot of people just didn't think about, their cars. And then last week we had the auction in Monterey, and some of these cars that were sleepers, I'll call them, went off for some really big prices. So you may not know what you're sitting on right now, but you could be sitting on a pretty valuable asset. And you have to ask yourself the question, what's going to happen with that asset when you're not around anymore? And unfortunately, it may just go away at a very low price. So it's important that you do everything you can to protect that, especially because you love that car. You know you do. So protect those who love it as well, who may not know enough that you know, because once you're gone, that's it. So we've been talking this morning about your car, and hopefully I gave you some information that was helpful. But now I want to talk to folks who have a collection or maybe a car that's worth quite a bit of money. Because let's just say that your heirs are not interested in your collection. You might decide to donate your vehicle to a charitable organization rather than sell it. And the rules surrounding charitable donations are different for vehicles donated during your life versus after you're no longer here. So if you donate the car, say, during your life and you want to take an income tax deduction, the rules are somewhat complicated. First, you need to hold that car for more than a year. Second, you want to donate that car to a public charity as opposed to a private foundation. And most importantly, the donated car has to be put to a use. This is interesting. That's related to the charity's tax-exempt function. Well, what would that be? Well, maybe like a car museum, for example. If the automobile is donated to, say, a shelter where the cars are not related to the organization's tax-exempt function, well, then you can only deduct what you paid for the car, not the fair market value. Now, what if you have a collection? And you would really like your collection to stay together. Now, these are special people. I understand. Maybe you have a lot of cars, some really nice cars, and they're wondering what they're going to do about these things when they're no longer here. Well, let's just say that you're still around. You're going to be around for a while, and you really enjoy all these cars. What you could do is you could set up your own charity or something called a private operating foundation. You could establish yourself as the foundation's senior officer in the board of directors, like the CEO, and then you could name other people as members of that board, like your kids. And that way, you still have control over the collection while you're still around. Henry Ford did this back in 1929. He set up a Henry Ford Museum. Maybe you've been there. I've heard it's pretty neat. I've never been there, but I heard it's kind of cool. And he received a tax deduction that was equal to the car's donated fair market value at that time. And the foundation can begin during your lifetime, as it did like in his. Or if you don't want to do that now, but maybe you want to do it later, then you can build this into your estate plan. And earlier I was talking about trust. Now, something you might want to think about, especially now with the $12 million exemption under the estate tax, is, of course, have all the cars appraised and valued. And if the values have gone up quite a bit as a result of the auctions last week in Monterey, now you have some pretty good numbers to go from. So let's say that you had a $5 or $6 or $7 or $8 million worth of car collection now, and you wanted to keep that going in posterity, and you wanted to make sure that there was money to pay for those vehicles to maintain them and have the public enjoy them. Well, then you definitely want to set up a trust, and you'd want to set up a special type of trust that would own those cars, managed by the foundation, say, and then you would transfer that now while you're alive to take advantage of the $12 million exemption. Because as I was talking about earlier, in 2025, we know that the 2018 tax changes are going to fade away. And the estate tax is going to go substantially lower by operation of law, because that 12.06 index for inflation will just go down. So one way you could keep those assets together for people to enjoy and to see sort of what you've built, because I'm sure there's a theme behind what you've done. And if it gets broken up, that may never be enjoyed by anybody. So if this is important to you and this is what you're trying to do, then you could set up the foundation now, fund it into a trust, make that gift known now, use your unified credit to partially or fully fund that now. And then if the law changes in the future, you've grandfathered the ability of all those assets to stay together and to pass on tax-free to the foundation or the next generation. It's a great way to keep something together that otherwise might be lost. And I was thinking about that because last week I happened to be up in Oregon and I was just tootling around waiting for the event to get started. And I saw this literally museum in someone's backyard. It was right next to the airport, and walked in there. I was quite surprised to see three different hangars and all sorts of vehicles and airplanes and things that had a theme That was really interesting, and to see how this person put it together. And so you can do it too. And of course, there's, you know, volunteers who love to talk about that stuff and show up, and it's a very interesting process. So planning for your future, even if it's unpleasant, is arguably a task for today. And I know most of us want the best for those who live on once we're gone, and we may also want the best for the cars that we're so attached to. So take the time now to set up a plan for a smooth transition for that eventuality. By doing so now, it doesn't mean you have one foot in the grave. Nope. It means you have your eyes focused down the road where they should be if you're a good driver. And that reminds me, if you have questions around any of this, I'd like you to stop and think about the following. Picture a day when you don't have to worry about these sort of things anymore. Picture a day when you're standing on a beach in Kapalua, Maui, with your wife, and she looks you in the eye and says, "Hey, thank you for taking some time to make this happen." Picture a day when you can relax, travel, and do all the things that you always wanted to do, getting those things out of the way that seem to always get in the way. It all starts with our retirement checkup. If you can call right now, pick up the phone, dial this number, 866-PROTECT. We'd love to talk to you. We are local here in the Bay Area. Again, 866-PROTECT. Pick up the phone and talk to a member of my team right now about what's possible in your future. 866-PROTECT. I'd like to give a big thanks to the Protect Your Assets team for putting together a great show today. Executive producer and network manager Kevin Renfer. Because without my team, I'm just another pretty voice on the radio. You've been listening to the Protect Your Assets show. I am David Hollander, the Sandman. Go out and make the rest of your life the best of your life.
Investment advisory services are offered through Liberty Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. The strategies mentioned are not suitable for everyone. The information expressed does not consider your specific situation or objectives and may not be appropriate for all investors. Past performance is not indicative of future results. To better understand the risk associated with investing and how it reacts to different market conditions, listeners should always consult with their qualified investment professionals, financial advisors, legal or tax specialists, and conduct their due diligence before making any financial decisions or taking any action. The legal information provided on the air is not intended to substitute for callers hiring their lawyers to advise them about personal legal matters. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Liberty Group LLC paid for the following program, and the host's views and opinions do not represent those of the station or its ownership. California Life Agent number 048569. Persons engaging the services of one affiliate of Liberty Group LLC companies should be aware that each company is operated separately. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Radio Network.